So we are holding on Nun Dalit Omar Aleph for about the middle of the Omud. Just about the middle of the Omud, line against Kesad. Okay, we started a discussion as follows. We know that an animal that's been worshipped as a Vedazara, even if it's a situation where, so if an animal has been worshipped as a Vedazara, which is called Nevad, then we said it's also to be used as a carbon. But on the other hand, the implication would seem to be that it's Mutter to a Heket. So we said that, if a person worshipped his own animal, then he has the ability to ask for it, but if somebody else worshipped it, then not. So we asked, we had a braisa that said that if it was done ba'onis, then it's still author. Ba'onis presumably means that somebody grabbed somebody else's animal and did it. So we said that no, it means that goyim, for example, forced him to worship his own animal. So we asked, but then that would be onis, and onis rachmana patre. So the last thing we said was that Rava said...
We didn't really define onis. I mean,
if we say that it means that he grabbed somebody else's animal, then it would mean that one person has the ability to ask for somebody else's animal. But we're saying not necessarily. Does it mean that? Rami Bachama says, so we're going to have a few other examples. The Gemara is going to give other answers later on, how it can be, what are we talking about when we say that an animal is nevad and becomes also bahana? But the first answer was, Rami Bachama, that we're talking about it's not somebody else's animal, it's his own animal. The difference is, the reason why it's onus is because goyim forced him to do it as opposed to him doing it willingly.
Okay, so my question to this is, what's the difference between forcing a yid to worship his animal and stealing his animal to worship it?
Because the difference is, stealing his animal to worship it, whoever it is that stole it does not have the ability to ask for somebody else's animal. But if he tells the yid, you worship this animal, which is your own animal, and if not, even ba'onis, yeah. Well, so that was Reb Zera's question. Given that onus rachmana patre, then on the face of it should not be considered that it was worshipped as of a desara. And the answer is that Rava says there's a difference between sinna and parhesia. So we discussed at the end yesterday, does that mean that Rava holds that if it's with sinna, if it's in private, you don't have to be moisa nefesh to not worship Avodah Zarah. Now, there is such an opinion. That's the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel in the Gemara in Sanhedrin. On the face of it, though, so it sounds like Rava Paskin like that. However, Tosfos has a problem with that for a number of reasons, one of which is Chas V'Shalom, Tosfos says, that we should Paskin that there should ever be a case of Yavar Val Yehorig when it comes to Avodah Zarah, even the Sinah. And Tosfos has a couple of other questions also. So one answer in Tosfos is that Rava is trying to answer the Braisa according to Rabbi Shmuel's opinion. Fine, he himself doesn't agree with Rabbi Shmuel. He himself agrees with Rabbi Yechanan that Yavah, Yehorid Val Yavah with the big three, whether the sinner or the sinner of a Pahatya. But he can use Rabbi Shmuel's opinion to understand our Braisa.
So we're more likely to say the onus Rahmana Patre means it's for everything but Avodah Zarah.
Tosfos makes is the difference is, it's true onus rachmana patre, and therefore, in other words, he's not subject to any kind of punishment. However, the difference is, there's sinna versus pahesia, which issue was he over on? What Rava was saying is, you have sort of like a klal or prat or klal. You have a klal not to worship a Vedazara, a prat that you should violate any mitzvah rather than be killed, another klal that says don't make a chilul Hashem. That you have a klal not to worship a Vedazara, you have a prat that says but not if it's an oinus, you have another klal that says but don't make a chilul Hashem. So another way of looking at it, the Tosfos says that the Tosfos quotes from the smag, the Ramosha Mikutzi, is that the distinction is, it's true, whether Bitsina over Pahesia it's also, the difference is that if it's Pahesia, he's being over on Moisechalu Hashem country, and also, therefore, on Avodah Zarah, because then effectively that's not included in the exemption. When it was Bitsina, he's not over on that, because there's no Chilul Hashem. Therefore, so that would be the difference. We could say then
but if
in private, there's much less of a Chilul Hashem.
But
it's not the same kind of thing. So therefore, in other words, the person does have to be Moisa Nefesh, even if it was Bitsina. However, the difference is, only if he did it but Pahesia, only then are we saying that it would be that he was actually over on the Loisa of game, not worshipping Avodah Zarah. In other words, if it was Pahesia, even though it was Ba'onis, we would say it's still an act of worship was done, therefore the animal was also, as opposed to if it was Bitsina, true, he shouldn't have done it Bitsina either, he should have gone on the Siddur Nefesh. Nevertheless, in that case, we can't consider the answer, the animal in Nevad.
If it was forced Bitsina.
If it was forced Bitsina, right.
the animal is, will not
so
be considered.
Then, according to the second explanation, the animal would not be considered neva. That was Rav Zeira's point. That Rav Zeira's point was onus rachmana patre, and the answer is it depends on the nature of the onus, whether it was a sin or a behavior.
Okay. Rachmana patre, what does this mean?
So rachmana patre means it's falter from punishment, but you can still.
But they'll say the animal is.
That's the point. Rava is making a distinction between whether it was a sin or a behavior. So the Gemara says, this is where we were up to, the line against Kesan. Omru le Rabbanan le Rava, so that Rabbanan say to Rava, Tanya de Misayalach, we have a braisa that supports what you're saying, that there was a difference, the point is, in other words, that there can be a case of onus where nevertheless we still consider the object as worship, and therefore it becomes also b'ana. A braisa says, b'misyoris shal ovik kachavim b'shatak zera, b'shatak shemam, really it's supposed to be, pedestals that were put up by going. That's the connection. I started mentioning yesterday that on the face of it, this Gemara doesn't seem to have any connection with our mission. That's the connection to b'musoi, because b'musoi is talking about pedestals yesterday. Okay. So b'musoi shal ovik kachavim b'shatak zera, b'shatak shemad, really it's supposed to be. Now, pedestals that the goyim put up during a period of shemad, during the time, during a period when they're trying to force the Jewish people to violate mitzvahs, even though the gzera or the shmad is eventually bottled, nevertheless, the bimusyois do not become bottled. They're still also b'ana. So therefore, the argument is, obviously now we're talking about Jews worship them b'onis. Nevertheless, we're saying once it was b'onis, then nevertheless they become also b'ana because they were worshipped. And we said they can never be bottled because an avodah zara of a Jew can never be bottled.
Even
if it wasn't, yeah. So in other words, the very fact that we see that b'onis,
it's not in a room.
No, but it could be, but it doesn't have to be. The point is that the Bryce is not making such a distinction, the same as their author.
Right.
However, Rava tells them, no, if that's what you're thinking, how to understand that Bryce is not necessarily a proof for what I'm saying. Because it could equally well be possible, inevitably, of all the Jews who are forced to worship it, there's inevitably going to be at least one Jew who says, you know what, look, the Jewish people are having a hard time of it. Maybe I may as well give up being a Jew and then go along with the ruling powers and Taka serve the Avodah Zarah sincerely. But he's first a Yid. He's a Yisrael Mumah now. Therefore, because of him, those pedestals become altar. Not necessarily because the other Jews who worship it by onus and never believe in it, but rather because you have
a stretch.
No, it's not so stretch. It's not such a stretch. And in fact, Rav Ashi, I'm a low tema aimer. Rav Ashi says you don't even have to say there's a possibility that maybe Elavadi Yisrael Mumah have a Palach Lobarotin. Definitely, among all the Jews who are in this situation, there's definitely inevitably going to be at least one Jew who gives up on Yiddishkeit, becomes a Mumah, and worships it willingly. Because, unfortunately, history bears it out. But in every period of Shmad, you have the vast majority of Jews go on Mesiras Nefesh, but you always have the few weak-willed ones or whatever. Sometimes it's more than a few, you know, when you have the Moranos, when you have the Anusim. No, but these are facts. We're talking about the actual halacha, whether the pedestal becomes after. We can't deal with Lashon Hara. The fact is, unfortunately, you have, and sometimes in Jewish history, you have more than just a few. Something, you know, you have the Anusim in Spain, for example. You have large numbers who are willing to pretend at least to be Christians, and some of them actually ended up believing in it, Taka. And in other times and other places also. So therefore, so Rava's point is it could be that there's a Yisrael Mumah among them. Rav Ashi's point is there definitely is. Either way, that doesn't tell us anything. Suppose that we have to, he says, Vada Rav Ashi, Alma Loitema Email of Vadi, Yisrael Mumah Havo Palachlobarov. So therefore, in other words, so Rava says, so there's no particular proof from this braisa that, let's say we had a situation, let's say we knew for a fact that not one Jew who ended up bowing to these pedestals actually meant it, that all of them were doing it only by us. Not necessarily is the braisa saying maybe also. The braisa is saying because chances are there's a mummer, or Rav Ashi says there's definitely a mummer. But if we had a way of knowing, not necessarily. So therefore, that doesn't necessarily prove Rava's point, that even if it was purely ba'onis, that nevertheless, at least in some circumstances, sinner versus behesia or whatever, that the animal itself should not become, or the pedestal itself should not become also. Okay. So all
the way of saying that if there was no Yisrael Mumah, then
so Rava would still Rava would still hold that it still becomes osur because Rava made the distinction sinna versus fahet, yeah, which again one way of looking at it in Tosfos is that Rava is only talking according to the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel, according to the halacha, which is it doesn't matter sinna or fahet, yeah, either way you're obligated to go on Mesiras Nefesh and not worship Avodah Zarah. Then either way, whether it was the sinner, whether it was the fahesia, according to the final halacha, the thing would still be osur because the fact is you weren't allowed to worship it. You were supposed to go on Mesiras Nefesh. Or the second answer in Tosfos, again, from the Snag, is that even with it, that even if we say you have to be Mesiras Nefesh in both cases, sinner or fahesia, nevertheless there's still a difference which Aveda was the person over. Was he over on Mesiras Obdim or was he over on Mesiras Chalav? Okay. So all that is one answer then, all that is Rami Bahama's one answer, that how do you have a circumstance where an animal is worshipped for onus and becomes also b'hanah? We're talking about where the worshipper of it was the owner of the animal himself, just that it was done by
it. Two expressions, those chalu, those avdum, it seems to...
No, but that's the point that Tosfos makes, is that when Moisa Avdim tells us you're not allowed to worship them, and a person worships them, he's chayav mitzvah, then when it says v'chayav b'hem, means that in all cases of onus, there's no, at least in sinah, then there's no iser, and there's no misah. There is the eser still, but there's no loisa there. Then when it says loisa chalalu, then you have, in prahesia, you're back to azhara and misah. That you have an azhara not to do it, and you chayav misah if you do. So therefore, you still have, based on Machai Abraham, you still have an exception for the sinner, not that you're allowed to, even the sinner, but at least that you're not over on Lois Sovdem or on Lois Chalav in that case. And therefore, the
end would narrow it to the sinner.
Right. So therefore, so in other words, the point is that then if it was the sinner, if it was, whatever it is, the point is if it was the sinner, then even though, again, a person is not allowed to go and worship Avodah Zarah even in that case, nevertheless, if he did, it didn't become Al-Sabana. Okay. Anyway, so all that was one, and all that was a discussion around Rami Bahama's first answer. The halacha is you're not allowed to worship Avodah Zarah either way. Not for sinner, not for Pahesia, even by Nisya. Okay. Chizkiya says here's a different answer, how we have a circumstance where person A is able to ask their person B's animal, even though usually A not a Moshe Dava Shein Shaloi. The case would be, suppose that he poured wine in honor of an Avodah Zarah onto its horns. The question is why, which on the face of it is an act of worship. So the question is, Maskefor of Adav Ava.
He wants to wash the horns.
No, we're talking about obviously he did it for Avodah Zarah. But the question is, Maskefor of Adav Ava, hai nevad hu. What are you talking about? That's not a nevad, hai bimus ba'almahu b'shayez. In that case, you're just effectively making the animal into a bimus, into a pedestal on which you're pouring wine for Avodah Zarah, and in that case, it should be mutter. Now, why should it be mutter? Rashi learns that the whole concept of Meshamshe, Avodah Zarah, does not apply to animals. This that we said, that you can have something that is used in the service of Avodah Zarah and becomes also Bahana, Rashi learns that does not apply to animals. And therefore, in other words, it's not also. Because Rashi learns that a pedestal can only be something, and again, in which the species yidei of them, just like you said before, that if a person worships somebody else's animal, then we said it's not also b'hana. So by the same logic over here, we're saying that you are not able to make somebody else's animal into a bimus. So therefore, Rabbi Hanana learns that the vort is because we said before that if a bimus, we learned according to Rish Lakish and Rabbi Yechanan, and the halacha is like them, that if a bimus is damaged even a little bit, then it's bottle. So fine, all you have to do is damage the animal a little bit. Why are we saying it's also b'hanah, like there's no way to do anything about it? All you have to do is cause some damage to it.
Meaning what, cutting?
Cut off some part of the animal or whatever, some small part, yeah.
Any part, yeah.
And then there's a third explanation also, that the Haggadah Sabbath takes out the word v'shavye and changes it to v'shavua, that you made it a bimus, which means not necessarily is the Gemara asking that it should be mutter b'hanah. The only question is, practically speaking, you're saying that this is the definition of nevad, but this is not, you're not worshipping the actual animal. Fine, maybe it's also b'hanah, but it's not, you can't call it that the animal itself was worshipped. The animal was used in the worship of some other deity. No, what we mean is that he poured wine in honor of that animal itself between its horns, meaning the Avod B'Maisa, then that means he actually did a Maisa with it, so that's different. In other words, when it comes to bowing to the Avodah Zarah, or when it comes to using it in worship of some other Avodah Zarah, you're not actually using the goof of it itself, that not, it's not his, therefore he can't ask for it. But if he's actually worshiping the animal, not only worshiping the animal, but doing a maisa on the animal itself, then we're saying, then according to the second explanation, according to Chizki and Rav Ada Bar Ava, then what we're saying is you do have the ability to access somebody else's animal, even though it's not yours, but you did a maisa on it. And once you did a major maisa on that, like pouring wine between its horns, which was a common Goyish ritual in those days, and some of the Rishonim
have
this. Between them, like some of the Rishonim talk about it, some of the Rishonim have this. The Rashba talks about that, maybe what it means is like you actually carved out a space in the horns over there for the wine to flow into or something, so that's considered a major maisa.
Yeah.
So that's it. The chihad of
that case, it would
be. So in that case it would be, even though it's not his, but he has it. The chihad of the Ula Amr Rabbi Yechanan, just as we find that when Ula came from Eretz Yisrael, he reported in the name of Rabbi Yechanan, that Afa Pisha Amr Hamashtachal Abahemus Chaveda Lai Osra, even though the Chachamim said, the din is that one person bows down to somebody else's animal, he doesn't ask for it again, because like we said, a person cannot ask for something that doesn't belong to him. However, if he did a maisa on it, then he can answer it. So here we have an example. He poured wine on
it.
Hishtachavi is not a maisa, but pouring wine on it.
And why is that?
Because pouring wine is an actual maisa.
No, I understand.
Yeah.
Why?
Because one involves the goof of the animal. Because when he does a maisa, fine, it's still not his. But once he did a maisa already, that's different. A maisa has the ability to affect somebody else's thing. Well, I mean, the fact of the matter is, for example, you know, you see that in a number of cases in halacha, right? But if I declare somebody else's thing hekdesh, it doesn't become hekdesh either. But if I actually pick it up and then take it someplace else, I may not have the right to do it. The fact is, it's been taken someplace. No, I'm not saying it becomes hekdesh, but the point is, the person does have the ability to break somebody else's thing or to move it someplace else or whatever. Not he's not allowed to, but the fact is, he did. Right? So the same thing, there can be a distinction.
He to be implying he is allowed.
Fine, no, we're not saying he's allowed. The point is he has the ability to.
Seems to me that once he bows to it, or he makes a maisa actually, it belongs to Avodah Zarah.
No, that's in Hekdesh Avodah Zarah. In Hekdesh Avodah Zarah, first of all. But no, we're talking, again, bowing is not a maisa that involves the actual animal itself.
Curving something in a horn.
Curving something in the horn or pouring wine or whatever. Yeah, that's an actual maisa. Yeah. So when Ula said this, Rav Nachman tells them, tells the Chachamim who heard Ula saying this in the name of Rav Yechanan, Puku v'imru leila Ula, go out and tell Ula, Kvar tigim Rav Huna l'shmaitach v'bavel. Rav Huna already explained this statement that you're bringing us from Rav Yechanan as if it's a chiddush that we didn't know before. You should know Rav Huna already explained it for us in Bavel.
To
the effect that when you do a maisa on somebody else's animal, then you're able to. Well, we just talked about it that Chizkia and Rav Ada Bar Ava said it, but then now we're clarifying that Rav Huna actually said it in so many words. If somebody else's animal is lying on the ground in front of Avodah Zarah, as soon as another person goes and shafts even one stimen, one of the two pipes in the neck, the windpipe or the esophagus, and shafts it in honor of Avodah Zarah, Osra, then immediately he answers it. In other words, the point is, even though one stimen is not a complete shritah, you need one stimen and most of another one. Nevertheless, that's enough to answer it. Now, why we meant...
That's considered enough of a maisa.
It's considered enough of a maisa because you have a concept.
It's part of it.
It's a maisa because there's a concept called yeshnava shchita mitzchilav atzlof. From the beginning to the end is all one big act of shchita. Therefore, this is the beginning of a shchita, and it was done the same of a dessert.
Okay, let's take another example. He had started carving in the horn, but hadn't finished.
Once he started, I guess it would be the same thing. Tosfos actually talks about earlier in connection with the kalim of the Bismikdash. Tosfos distinguishes actually between what's called maisa rabba and maisa zuta. A big action versus a small action. Where the argument is, Tosfos says that maybe the vote is that a big action is enough to answer it even for a hedyot, it becomes also a secrevis of a desara, whereas a maisa zuta, a small action, is only enough to answer it for a hektish, only enough to answer it as a korban, but not a hedyot. Okay. Anyway, the point is that we see that a maisa on somebody else's animal is capable of answering it. Now, why are we mentioning, by the way, that the animal is lying there in front of a desara? So Rashi explains that not over here, but this Gemara also shows up in Cholin, so we'll learn it next year, Beis Hashem. But Rashi over there explains is that if it wasn't lying down there, if the person actually had to pick it up, then for sure it's also because then he's koine it, then effectively koine it by picking it up, he becomes a galvan, he's hired for all purposes on it. Therefore, of course, he'd be able to answer it. Now it's his. The chiddush is even if it was laying down. So he didn't actually pick it up. Nevertheless, the shchita is enough to answer it. Tosfos argues on that and says that no,
if it's laid down,
if it's laying down, so he didn't do any act of kinyan on it, right. It still belongs to the other guy. Nevertheless, his shritta of even one siman is enough to have to it. Tosfos disagrees with that. And obviously the Gemara says shchitas. Is that Tosfos disagrees with that concept? Even if you were to pick up the animal, he would only be chayiv and onesin. It wouldn't make that it's actually his for all purposes. So no, Tosfos just says the point is, even though again he only did it, he didn't do a ma'isa gadol. He didn't actually make it lie down. He only did a ma'isa katan. He only did a small action of shechting one siman, or even less than one siman. Nevertheless, that's enough to answer it. By the way, the Gemara in that Gemara in Cholin, that Sugya in Cholin, deals with another issue also. Where you were asking yesterday, who are we talking about, bow down kid, or in this case, shechted or whatever? Are we talking about, was it a yid or was it a goy? The Gemara in Cholin there makes a distinction, which we don't have in our Gemara over here. If the person who did it was a yid, a regular run-of-the-mill yid, then it actually does not become asur b'hanah. Because even if he claims that he did it l'shem avodah zarah, whether the pouring wine or the bowing or whatever, we assume he didn't actually do it because he really believes in avodah zarah and is doing it in honor of that. Rather, he did it because he wants to harass the other guy. He wants to make the other guy uncomfortable.
A yid would not, generally speaking.
Right. However, if he's a strong mummer, no, not to be mevakel. Mevakel, a yid can't be mevakel. Yeah.
No.
No, we're saying ordinarily a yid doesn't go worship over his daughter, right. Out of the blue, right? If he's a strong mummer or a goy, then that's different, yeah. And that's how the halacha is going.
No, a reputation.
No, I guess he's done if he sees that before. He's worshipped over his daughter, yeah. So the question is, Manolon de Ostra. Fine, where do we know this concept from? How tacka do we know that if somebody starts shechting an animal with shame of a desire that it should be also? So again, okay, based on that Gemara and Cholin, we're not talking about a regular yid, we're talking about a Yisrael Mumma or a Goy. But how do we know that concept is? Elam and the Koyanim, are we going to say we learn it from the Koyanim, the Koyanim who worshipped of a desire in the time of the first Beit Mikdash, and not all of them did it voluntarily, some of them were forced to do it by the kings of Yehuda and the kings of Israel. And nevertheless, the Pasuk says in Yechezkel that they are never allowed again to serve as Kohanim. So therefore, you should argue on that basis. We see, therefore, that it's possible for them to be also, even though it was Varinus. So the question is, V'dumah shayni Kohanim d'bnei. Maybe, though, the difference is Kohanim are sentient beings. Therefore, like we said before, previously, I'm in Bays on the Bays, we should argue, we make a knas on them, that because even though they were forced into it, but maybe, no, it wouldn't apply to an animal, in other words. So how do we know it applies to an animal? How do we know it applies to an animal then, that if Reuven owns an animal, and Tony, the goy, that goes and treffs it, that was saying that should make it osur. The animal's not sentient. Who says that? He has the ability to make it osur. The element abnim is there. Are you going to say that, are you going to say that maybe we learn it from the case of the stones of the Mizbeach, that we said the other day, that the stones of the Mizbeach were used for Avodah Zarah worship by the Greeks, and then when the Hashmonaim recaptured the Beit Mikdash, they have to take apart the Mizbeach and hide away the stones?
Does that apply to an animal?
Well, on the face of it, it should, and stones aren't sentient, and neither are animals. So maybe, in other words, again, the same way as we see that the Malcha Yavan used them for Avodah Zarah, and even though it didn't belong to them, nevertheless, they had the ability doing a mitzvah with them to answer them, so therefore we should say on the same basis over here, shechting an animal. The answer is, but not necessarily, v'dumah kedidei papa. Maybe the reason why that works is because in that case, we said the goyim were kind of them. We learned from the Pasuk over there, they were priests in the Chilalua.
Maybe,
but in other words, you can't prove. So how can you prove from that case that if the goy or the Yisrael Mumma were to shech this animal, l'shem avodah zarah, that he would make it also when after all it's not his? You can't learn it from that case. In that case, the goyim were in fact koyna those stones because of all the pritz and b'chilalua, like we said the other day. How can we prove from that? In this case, where the goy wasn't koyna the animal with the shchita. The elam kalim. So, are we going to say that we're going to learn it from the case of the kalim? You need a proof. If Rav Huna is saying a din, you need a proof for it. Where is he getting this din from? The Elam Kalim. So no, are you going to say maybe that we learn it from the case of the Kalim of the first Beit Mikdash, what we learned the other day, and then Beis on the Beis, that we said all the Kalim of the Beit Mikdash, which Achaz caused to be misused and used to Avodah Zarah, Hechanu Hikdashnu, we prepared them and we sanctified them. And we learned over there that Rebbe explained that the meaning of the pasuk was Hechanu Shegnaznum, Hechanu means we stored them away, we put them in Gnizah, because we can't use them again. V'hikdashnu she'hikdashnu acherim tachtein, and hikdashnu means that we consecrated new kalim to replace them. So then you're going to learn. You're going to learn from that, maybe.
So you're going to learn from that.
Why not? The point is, a Kaylee is not sentient. Neither is an animal. And yet, sentient doesn't have a dea, didn't knowingly participate in Avodah Zarah. And yet we say it's author. So by the same logic, we should argue over here that the same thing, the animal that gives us a reason to say they're author. But we have to ask, after all, the fact is a person is not able to ask for something that doesn't belong to him. So after all, how did those kalim become author in the first place? Ella, we have to answer. Now we understand. Given to Ovid will meister itzuru, once a meister was actually done with them, then they became author. Rashi learns that it's actually a greater drabana, a chizkiya, and his basin made a greater on it that not only they're also to use for the business, they're staff fine. They were used for Avodah Zarah. But that they should be also to use for a hediyah. Now, when we learned it the other day, Rashi said over there that technically they could have used them for a hediyah, but the Gemara said over there it would be a gnai to take something from a hediyah, as to take something from a hektish and use it for a hediyah. Here, Rashi is not mentioning that. Here, instead, Rashi says that the chachamim of that time, Chizkiyah and his basin, made a zera that it's also even for a hediyah. Because otherwise, they could have been poyed to them, and they could have next used it. No, so the point is, in other words, that since a Maisa was done with them, so they're also Midaraisa for Korbanus, to use in the Mishmikdash, and Midrabanon, they're also period, even though it didn't belong to them, but since a Maisa was done with them, Hachanami, so now we can understand in the case of the animal, Kibin Sha'osav a Maisa also. Yes, so fine. Once he does a Maisa in it, then it becomes author to a Hediyah. Yes, so according to Rashi, it would come out that it's Drabanon. There are Rishonim who learn that it would actually be Daraisa. But whatever, the point is that now we have a basis for Ravona Din, that we learn it from those Kalim of Achaz, from those Kalim that Achaz misused for Avodah Zarah. So that's that then. So there is a case where you are, so now we have so far then, so there are a few cases where one person is able to ask for somebody else's animal as of it as well. We have three explanations what it means that it's done by onus, which implies one is Rami Bahamas, that it's true, one person can never ask for another one's animal. The only way for it to become also by onus is if he himself bowed to it by onus. But then we have two answers that say that actually there are cases where one person is able to ask for somebody else's animal. One is where Chizkiyah's answer, where he poured wine between his horns, and the other one is where he shechts the animal. L'shem Avodah Zarah. Yeah. Okay.
Other than those cases, then no.
Okay. Okay. When Rav Dini came from Eretz Yisrael,
so that's that.
Yeah. Okay. So now a new topic. He also Rav Dimi Omer Rav Yechanan. When Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he reported in the name of Rav Yechanan. Here was another thing. And we learned in the previous parak that if somebody bows down to ground, then he doesn't make it author. Therefore, we said in the previous parak the mountains and the hills that they worship as Avodah Zarah don't become author. That's true. However, if he dug in it pits or ditches or caves, like for water, doing that l'shem Avodah Zarah, Osra, then he asks it even for a hediyah, because that is then the tfitzis yidei adam, right? Right. And the point is that then, yeah. So then actually, for example, the whole mountain will become Osra. Because they dug these things in l'shem Avodah Zarah.
And if he, instead of digging in, he put a mound or...
So the mound will be Osra. But here we dug in it, l'shem, yeah. If you have a machlokas rishonim, does it become also right away when he dug them, or does he have to now afterwards worship the mountain for them to become also? In other words, we have a person, this guy was worshiping this mountain beforehand. Now one day he decided to dig pits in it, for example, to collect water for Avodah Zarah. Does it become also as soon as he digs the pit, or only after he worships it? No, that was a different discussion in general. That we have a more general discussion between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva. When a guy makes an Avodah Zarah, does it become also right away or only when he worships it? Mm-hmm. Here it's a slightly different nuance. Here, the mountain is never going to be also no matter how long he worships it. But once he digs pits in it, then it will. So that's the question. At that point, does it become also because he worshipped it before and now he's digging pits for shame of Avodah Zarah, therefore it becomes immediately also, or maybe not. Maybe it still needs to be after he digs the pit. Then he continues worshipping the mountain, only then does it become also. That's what Machlokes is trying. Okay. He also Rav Shmuel by Yehuda Amar Rav Yechon, and then when Rav Shmuel by Yehuda came from Eretz Yisrael, he reported in the name of Rav Yechon, here's another din, even though we say in general if a person worships living animals, he doesn't make them Osir, because again, there's no specificity there of them. However, asan chalifin la'avodas kachamim. Right. Well, unless it was a ma'aseh. Right. Just worshiping them. Just worshiping them by themselves. We said no. So we said on Amud Aleph it makes them nevad as far as korbanos. Doesn't make them also for a hedyon. So even though worshipping, even though bowing down to Baal HaKayim does not after them lahed yet, just like it doesn't after mountains and hills.
It was a korban already.
So then it already belongs to Hekdesh. That might be different. So there, you have
to be considered as neva.
Maybe, I don't know. I'm not sure about that actually. We very likely the Gemara discusses that in the Sefer Tzemura, which is the main place where we talk about neva, but I don't know. Anyway, the point is that, again, the same thing as the mountains and the hills and whatnot, where we said that if they worshipped without Maisa, then they're not also Lahedyas, they're just also the Gavaya, they're also to use for worshipping Hashem, for example, for
and if you dig in a mountain.
If we dig, then we said the mountain does become also. But so by the same logic, in other words, bowing down to a behemoth, whether it's his own or somebody else's, does not after it for a Hedyas, but it does after it to be used as a carbon. However, Asan Chalifim, Avodas Kechavim Asran. However, if a person uses an animal as exchange for Avodah Zarah, then it does become osur. So here is a way in which a living animal is able to become osur. So a person had an avodah zarah, a statue.
Right.
He traded it to a guy for an animal. Now that animal is osur
bana. That's right, the statue.
The statue, of course, is osur. Yeah. He also Robin Amar. Then when Robin came, he reported that actually there's a machlokas within that. Tigu bar Rabbi Shmuel v'Rabbi Yosi v'Rabbanan. Rabbi Shmuel v'Rabbi Yosi and Rabbanan disagree about the details of that. One says that only the direct object of exchange is osur, but not an exchange for an exchange. So again, if you had that, a yid has an avodah zarah, and he trades it to a goy for an animal, so the animal becomes osur. Now what happens though? Let's say, for example, instead he traded the avodah zarah to a goy for a car, let's say. Later on he sells the car and buys an animal, he trades the car for an animal. Would the animal then be osur? So one opinion is that that'll be mutter, because that's too far removed from the original of a desire. As long as it's at least one thing away. It wasn't directly traded for the desire. The other opinion between these two Tanoim, Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yosi, and then Rabbanon, is that even Chalife, Chalife, Nasurin, so even he traded the Avodah Zarah for a car, and then he traded the car for an animal, but the animal will still be osur. Okay, so what are the reasons behind the two opinions? My time and demand of a Khalifa Khalifa Nasurin. What's the reasoning of the opinion that says that it'll be also no matter what, even however far it is removed? Because
that's what it means?
Yeah.
That there's no end,
basically. Because the reason is because Amak Prabha Yusakhidam Kamayu, because the prophet says you will be a thing that has to be destroyed, like it. Implying kol mashat the mahaya mimenu hareu kamosu, anything that you make happen through it becomes like it. So therefore, even if it's a long chain of things between the avodah zarah and the object that we're talking about, it was all brought about, it was all set into motion by avodah zarah. Therefore, it'll be awful.
So that should be the idach.
Wait, the idach. What is the other opinion answer? The answer is, he says, true, you do have that pasuk by yisachayim kamayu, but you have a pasuk that says who. The end of that same pasuk says, the end of that pasuk is ki cherem hu, because it is cherem, it's milt. Hu v'loi chalife chalifet. So it means only it, but not chalife chalifet. Okay, so v'idach, so what would the first opinion answer to that? What is he going to do with that milt from the word hu? The answer is, ahumim v'loi l'mo'ote orla v'kalaya kerem. He would say that word who is not to teach us that there's a limitation within Avodah Zarah itself between Chalifin and Chalifin Chalifin. No, it teaches us that there is a distinction between Avodah Zarah versus other Isurei Hanav, such as Orla and Kalaya Kerem. Now, Orla and Kalaya Kerem are also...
This
opinion would say there's no limitation when it comes to Avodah Zarah. Who is not meant to make a limitation within Avodah Zarah? Who is meant to make a limitation, you shouldn't think this concept of al yisa chayim kamoyu applies to other isurei hanah, such as orla and kalaya kerem, which after all are also hanah, because the difference with those is shein machran b'kiddush b'dvein b'kodeshin. Even though you're not allowed to sell orla, you're not allowed to have hanah from orla, you're not allowed to have hanah from kalaya kerem, nevertheless, if somebody did sell orla or somebody did sell kalaya kerem, even though he's also to do that, and he was makadish a woman with that money, she would still be Mekodeshes. And Rashi says the logic is because even though you're not allowed to have Hanah from it, And the Hana indirectly comes from Orla. She didn't actually get the Hana directly from Orla.
She
got it from what he sold the Orla for. The Midrabbanan will be also. But the Midrabbanan will be also. Now, Tosfos asks the question, so why don't the Rabbanan ask her if I Kedusha Yishayter? And Tosfos gives two answers. One is because the fact is it's not really so similar to Chalifei Chalifin. Because after all, even though we talk about Kinyan, even though we talk about Kedushin as a form of Kinyan, she's not actually bought with the money of Kedushin or the object of Kedushin. So it's not really the same thing as a trading one thing for another. It's just different. The other reason is because the Rabbanan weren't going to be good, because after all, Piri Verivia is an important thing. So therefore, the Rabbanan are willing to let it slide in this case. But other than that, it'll be also the Rabbanan. The point is, though, the word who, according to that opinion, teaches us that this concept of Khalifa, Khalifa, also that if you traded Avodah Zarah for item A and item A for item B, etc., that all of them are going to be also Hana, that only applies to Avodah Zarah. The who tells us it doesn't apply to other Isurei Hana, such as Orla and Kalayapay. The Edok, what would
mean?
Right. Well, it's a miut according to both of them. One opinion says that the miut to teach us, it only applies to the first thing traded for Avodah Zarah, not for whatever is traded for that. The other one says it means only Avodah Zarah, but not Orla and not Kalayapay. The Idach, what would the first opinion answer to that?
About this one.
Yeah, well, it's true. He also agrees with that din, that if you sell Orla or Kalaya Kerem and use the money for Kedushin, then it works. So where, The answer is Orla or Kalaya Kerem, let's do Chemiyota. He says, you don't need a Miyot to tell us that it doesn't apply to those. To have Yilu Avodah Kechav Moshviyas Shnei Ksur Mabarim Ke'achad, because you have this concept in connection with Avodah Zarah, you have a positive that says a similar concept in connection with Shemitah, with Shviyas, that's also Tofes Domov, that that Shviyas also, whatever fruit of Shviyas is traded for, is also Tofes, also has the Kedusha of Shviyas. And when you have two Pesukim that teach us the same concept, that teach us the same din, it means it's exclusive to them. We're not meant to learn from it for other things. We've had that in many places. So therefore, he says, so automatically we know Orla and Kalaya Kerem are not included anyway. I don't need the word who to tell us it doesn't apply to them. Therefore, I have the word who available to teach us that even within Avodah Zarah itself was a limitation. Now, so where do we see it in connection with Shemitah? So, Avodah Sechav Mahadam Moran, with Avodah Zarah we said that you have the
connection with Shemitah.
That's the point, because we have Shnei Ksum, Avodah Kachav. We have, when it comes to Avodah Zarah, that you trade an Avodah Zarah for object A, and object A for object B, etc. So we're saying that it's Tosfos. Well, forget about object B. According to the first opinion that said that Chalifei Chalifin is author, fine. What we're saying is you traded Avodah Zarah for item A. So we're saying item A becomes author, and the Avodah Zarah itself is, of course, also author.
Right.
We have a similar concept when it comes to Shvi'as. So Avodah Sechav Mahadam Moran, so with Avodah Zarah we just explained, because we learn it from Vayisa Chayram Hamayhu. Shvi'as, where do we know it by Shvi'as? Because like this, the Pasuk says, actually in connection with Yovel, but Yovel and Shmita are much the same as far as these game. Ki Yovel hi kodesh tiyalachem. The Pasuk says, because it is Yovel, it shall be holy for you. Meaning, we learn from that by calling it kodesh, ma kodesh, tofes as dam of v'asur, just as with kodesh, with hektish, when you trade hektish, when you redeem hektish for money, then the money gets grabbed on with the kedusha of hektish, and therefore it becomes also bahana. Shviyas, tefes as dam of v'asur, so shviyas is also the same thing. You trade shmita fruit for something else, then that thing becomes also, with kedusha shviyas, that is. Because it is Yovel Kodesh to Yolachan. But, we say this in the word, the fact that it's compared to Kodesh. However, E Ma Kodesh Tofes is Dom of V'yotze L'cholen. However, let's consider, what happens by Hektish? If you have an object of Hektish and you redeem it for money, the object of Hektish now becomes Mutter Bahana. It's no longer Hektish. The money becomes also Bahana. So therefore, af shviyas, you would think in that case, if we're comparing shviyas and yovel to hektish, then the same thing should happen. Tefesis is the mayor of yotzei l'cholin. You would think that it grabs the money now becomes kedusha shviyas, but the fruit of shviyas now goes out l'cholin and can be eaten. No. Tamalena tiyah. No, therefore the pasuk says in that same pasuk, tiyah, ki yovel hi kodesh tiyah lachem, tiyah meaning bahava yosa tahay, meaning it will always remain in its original state. Okay, Sad, so what does that mean? It will always be. Yeah, it'll always retain its status. Okay, Sad, so what does that mean? How does this work out, practically speaking? It means like this. Look at the Pedas Shavias Foster. Suppose a person takes Pedas Shavias and uses them to buy meat. So now both the original fruit as well as the meat has to have beer done when Shmita comes. There comes a point sometimes for some kinds of foods. So during Shmita, most of them, it's after Shmita, where there comes a point where there's none of that fruit available in the fields anymore for the wild animals to eat. And we learn from a pasuk over there that we have to recover lachaya, that once there's none of it available wild for the animals, for the wild animals to eat, then you have to get rid of whatever that kind of fruit that is that you have in your house. So for example, let's say grapes. Grapes, the time for beer for them is Pesach of the year following Shemitah. In other words, if you have any grapes that grew during Shemitah, some of them are still, most of them are harvested at the end of
Pesach.
You have grapes that grew during Shemitah.
Right.
They grew, they
right.
grew on their own.
So
once around. So therefore they have Kedusha Shavuot.
Right.
What happens is that throughout Shemitah you have the various rules. You can only use them for food. You can't throw them away, etc. You have all kinds of different dinners. Now, here we're talking about one particular dinner Shemitah called beer, which is, eventually Shemitah is over. A new crop of grapes starts growing. However, you can still find on the vines in the vineyards, you can still find grapes here and there. Most of them are harvested at the end of the year or the beginning of the next year. Some of them are still sticking around on the vines until Pesach time. Come Pesach, there are no more grapes from last year left on the vines. At that point, the din is you have to do beer. You have to take any grapes that from Shemitah fruit that are in your house and do beer on them. What is beer? The Rambam learns it means you actually have to destroy them. You either have to eat them or you have to destroy them. Most other Rishonim hold, and this is halacha, all you have to do is declare them hefker. And then if nobody else takes them, then you can take them back. But then either way, that's beer. The Rambam would hold that, yeah, if you can eat them, so much the better, obviously. But the Rambam would hold you have to destroy any ones that are remaining. The most Rishonim hold, it just means you have to put them out of your house. Whatever the point is, in other words, so a person, let's say, had grapes of Shemitah that are in his house, he has them Cheshvan, Kislev, Tevis, Shvat, Adar, Nisim time. At some point during that time, he exchanged some of those grapes for meat. Now he has some of that meat in his freezer come Pesach time. The original grapes, any that are left, are going to have beer done to them. The meat is also going to have those beer done to it. Again, it's going to have to be destroyed according to the Rambam or put out of his house according to everybody else.
The Rambam explains that in detail.
The concept is a halacha that you find in Mishnayos. You find the details of what beer consists of. That's the machlokes of the Rambam versus everybody else. Whether it involves destroying it or whether it involves putting it out of his house. Anyway, so that's what we mean. In other words, the Peiros Shviyas, we have the original Peiros have the Kedusha of Shviyas, and therefore comes beer, you have to put them out. The meat that you traded this for also has the same Kedusha. And continues the Braisa. Lokach v'boso dogim. Now let's say he traded some of the meat for fish. Fine, now the meat does not have Kedusha Shviyas anymore. He can keep the meat in his freezer as long as he wants, past Pesach. However, now the fish has Kedusha Shviyas, and he has to get rid of it by Pesach time. Bedogim Yayin, later on, let's say he trades the fish for some wine. Yosu Dogim Nechnas Yayin. So now the fish loses Kedusha Shviyas, and now the wine has Kedusha Shviyas, and it has to be gotten rid of at the time of the
Shviyas.
The yayin shemen, if he trades some of that wine for oil, yotze yayin and nechus shemen, and the wine leaves the chasriyas, and the oil comes in. Okay, so what's the bottom line? Achron, achron, nit chasriyas, whatever is last in the chain has the chasriyas, and has to be dealt with at the time of the year. Or pre asma also, but the original fruit of Shemitah remains still in its original kedusha and its original restrictions of Shemitah. So therefore, so now we see, in other words, so then this mandama says, so you have a similar concept that you have by Avodah Zarah and you have by Shemitah. Now, it's not identical, because by Avodah Zarah we're saying, according to this opinion, it's only the first object that becomes also Bahana, but not the second one. By Shavuot, we're saying by Shavuot, we're saying it's not the whole chain, we're saying it's the last one in the chain.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's not exactly the same thing, but it's a similar concept that the original thing becomes author, that the original thing remains author, and the new thing also becomes author. You have a similar concept by both of them. So therefore,
in one it's the first
and
one is last.
That's fine, but nevertheless, you still have the basic concept that unlike most Isurei Hanah, unlike, for example, Hekdesh, where once it's traded, the original thing loses its Isur altogether, here it doesn't. So therefore, he argues, in that sense, Shemitah and Avodah Zarah are similar enough. Therefore, the Torah teaches us that din by those two. It means it only applies to those two. It does not apply to Orla. It does not apply to Kalei Kerem. Therefore, I don't need the word who to give a meal that it doesn't apply to Orla and Kalei Kerem. We know it automatically from that.
In a way, Shemitah and Zarah is stronger than Kodesh.
That's what we're saying, yeah. Okay, the Idach, now what would the other opinion, the one who says that the entire chain becomes author, what does he answer to that? what the fact is, yeah, you have the word who, and you're arguing that who you don't need is a mirror because shnei ksuvim abayim ka'achad. The answer is kastavar. That opinion will hold. Shnei ksuvim abayim ka'achad melamdin. Okay, you have it. There is an opinion that you have in a few places in Shas that even if you have two psukim that teach us the same din, you can derive from them for other places. You can use them as a binyan av for other places. Therefore, just because it says it by Shemitah and it says it by Avodah Zarah, doesn't mean we wouldn't know to learn it also that it applies by Orla and by Kalai Karen. Therefore, the it's the chulam outinu. So therefore, this opinion would say you need the word who to exclude them. Mm-hmm. That you should not use the shnei ksuvim. And therefore, he says you need the word who for that. Therefore, I don't have it available. So therefore, I don't have the word who available to teach us that only the first item in the chain is offered. Therefore, I can hold v'yisachayim kamayu. The entire chain is offered. Some of the Rishonim explain that the vort is, again, given that after all, Shmita and Avodah Zarah are not identical, because by Shmita it's the last item in the chain, and by Avodah Zarah, according to the first opinion, it's only the first one, then therefore he will say, what does it mean, Shnei Ksuvim Abayim Ka'achad Melamdin? He's not talking about the general concept that we find in a few places in Shas, that there is an opinion, Rabbi Yehuda, I think it is, who says that Shnei Ksuvim Abayim Ka'achad Melamdin. He's saying, here's a special case. Because it's not identical by Shmita and by Avodah Zarah, therefore you can't say that the Torah only meant it to apply to these two and not any others, because the fact is, you see, it applies differently by each one of them as well. Therefore, we could use either one of them as a binyan av for Orla and Kalai Kedem, and therefore we need the word who to tell us don't do that binyan av.
But that's not generally accepted.
So in other words, you have two ways of understanding this last line of the Gemara. One is that the second Manda Amar is going to say that in general, Shnei Ksuvim Abayim Ka'achad Melamdin, that even though we have the same thing repeated in two different dinim, nevertheless we can use it as a binyan av for other places, on Michael Post's opinion. The other understanding of the Rishonim would be that this is a special case, because here the Shnei Ksuvim are not teaching us the exact same thing. Now, who is the halacha like? So that in turn results in a difference of opinion among the Rishonim, who the halacha should be like. If we learn that the opinion says Shnei Ksuvim Abayim Ka'achad Melamdin, well, we know the halacha is that Shnei Ksuvim Abayim Ka'achad Ein Melamdin. Once we have something said twice in the Torah in connection with two different mitzvahs, we do not use it ever as a binyan av for something else.
So why do we say that Melamdin?
Well, we have an opinion that Melamdin. The halacha is not like it. One second. So according to that way of looking at it, it should come out, therefore, then in that case, we should say that opinion does not work off the halacha. The halacha must be according to the first opinion, that only the first object traded for Avodah Zarah is after, nothing else. And therefore, the halacha should be like that. On the other hand, if we understand that we're saying that ordinarily even this opinion agrees that Shnei Ksuvim Abayim Ka'achad Ein Melamdin, but here he says an exception because not really Abayim Ka'achad because they're not teaching us the same din, then the halacha could very well be like that.
Opinion,
like, yeah. So it ends up being a machloikus Rishonim. It ends up being a machloikus between the Rambam and the Tur. And again, in Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaber brings both opinions. He says it is mutter, the Yesh Oisrim being the Rambam. So again, given that the Mechaber mentions the lenient opinion first, that means he agrees with it more. But nevertheless, he still brings the other one. The other one is valid and it's proper to be and it's proper to be machmir. Alright, so now we're done with the dinim of Avodah Zarah. Almost all of the rest of Or Masechta, beginning from Nun Hayam and Aleph, is going to be dealing with the detailed dinim of Yain Nesech. However, before we leave the concept of Avodah Zarah, we have an Agadta Mishnah and an Agadta Gemara to go with it to ask. We have to figure out the basic concept. We've been talking for the last 15 blocks about Avodah Zarah. And actually, in a greater or lesser extent, we've been for the last 50 odd blocks. If Avodah Zarah is such a terrible thing, why does it still exist? So therefore, that's the Mishnah is going to give us some perspective on that. So that we understand once and for all, so that, you know, we've been talking about this. Avodah Zarah, well, that's what we're going to deal with. That's what we're going to deal with. It's a little longer than that, but yeah. But the fact is, you know, you're living in a society. Imagine you're a Yid living in the time when the Mishnah and the Gemara was written. The entire Goyish society around you is full of Avodah Zarah, full of idols all over the place. And therefore, eventually, a Yid is going to ask himself, Nu, maybe Taka. So therefore, this Mishnah is meant to be shown all that. Yeah, because... Maybe, after all. So why does it still exist? If it's such a terrible thing, then why does Hashem allow it to exist? So, surely...
forbidding it to a Yid.
But that's fine. That's not...
Otherwise, it would be forbidden.
No, but that doesn't mean it's thought to be so ubiquitous. So shalos haskein and beruim. So the asked haskein, and also actually one of the Mefarshim on Yaakov points out the same way as we know the famous story we learned in Sanhedrin about where the Anshe Knesset Gdola davened for the Yetzer Hara of Avodah Zarah to be taken away, because they said, after all, Hashem, why did you give it to us so we can fight against it and receive a reward? At this point, we don't want that Avodah Zarah, and we're willing to forego the reward. Fine, but we can't deal with that Avodah Zarah anymore. So a Yid is likely to ask himself the same thing. Fine, yes, there's a great mitzvah to stay away from Avodah Zarah, and it's tremendous schar, but it's so difficult. Why does Hashem have to allow this situation to continue to exist? Take away Avodah Zarah.
Hashem didn't accept his demands.
No, he did. He did take away the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah from the Jewish people. Yeah.
How do we know?
Because we know, and the time of the second... The Jewish people from that time and on did not have a Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah. The Gemara tells us that it was actually taken away. So, yeah. Okay. So, Shalos Haskein and Beruim. No, so that's what, of course we have an answer. The answer is going to be in our Mishnah and the Gemara following it. Shalos Haskein and Beruim.
So what's the answer?
Wait, relax. Shalos Haskein and Beruim. They ask the elders, meaning the Chachamim, in Rome. At various times, the Chachamim visited Rome. During one of these times, they asked them as follows. If your God, if Hashem does not want Avodah Zarah, Lama Enim Abasla, why doesn't he destroy it? Or destroy its power, or whatever. Amrulahan.
That's a very simple answer.
Amrulahan. So the Chachamim answered like this. Ilo l'dava she'en tzarech la'olam bai ho'ya ovdin. If people only worship things that the world anyway doesn't need, ho'ya mevatla, then fine, Hashem could destroy it. But after all, harein ovdin l'chamo l'olavana l'chachavim or l'chachavim l'mazalas. But after all, you have goyim will worship the sun, the moon, the stars, the planet. Yes, those are things the world needs. Ya'avid elam emimta ashotim. Do you expect Hashem to destroy his world because of fools? And they're misusing. People are misusing these things. So they asked him, Omrulahan, so the goyim asked him, Im kein ya'avid davash ein tzarech la'olam boy. In that case, fine. Let Hashem destroy the avodah zarah that the world does not need, like the statues and whatnot. And leave intact the things that the world does need, like the sun and moon.
How can you answer things like that? You're just told that we don't need them, none of them.
No. The sun and the moon we need. So if you have goyim,
we need the sun and the moon. We don't need them to be worshipped.
Obviously, but the point is, part A of the Chacham's answer was that, fine, maybe Hashem could destroy the ones that we don't need, but after all, what about the ones that we do need? You can't say across the board, the Chachamim say, Hashem should destroy all objects of worship, because that would mean destroying the whole world.
Obviously.
So now these goyim are answering back, if so, then at least let Hashem sort of meet us halfway, show that he hates Avodah Zarah to the extent that he's going to destroy and prevent from existing any Avodah Zarah that are worthless anyway, that, like statues and whatnot, leave the sun and the moon and whatever intact because they're needed.
Okay.
Amrullah, so the Chacham answered them, that would create a different problem. That all that would do is that would strengthen the hands and the ideas of those who do worship the sun and the moon. Because they would say, on the contrary, people who worship the sun and the moon and whatnot, if all the terrestrial of the Zaras were destroyed and all the celestial ones, the sun and moon and so forth, continue to exist, okay, these people would say, look, obviously the sun and moon must be divine, because they didn't cease to exist. So Maharsha explains the point in a very subtle way like this. He says, the verse is that if this were to happen... So Maharsha explains the point of the Chachamim's answer was as follows. You're saying that the sun and moon should continue to exist, but the Avodah Zarahs that are not necessary shouldn't be destroyed. But that's going to lead the people who worship them to say, they're not going to realize, okay, they were left alone because the world needs them. Or rather, what they're going to say is, that very fact that the world needs them, and therefore that they can't be destroyed, proves that they're divine beings. So therefore, like this, when everything is left intact, both
says who?
That's Maharsha explains the argument in the Mishnah over here. If everything is left intact, then at least that means when people worship the goyim, who worship the sun and whatnot, they might think that the sun is a divine being. Obviously, they do that worship it. But on the other hand, we can answer them, no, it doesn't necessarily mean anything. You see that after all, there's a statue made out of wood, which the world doesn't need, and yet Hashem doesn't destroy it either, for reasons known to him. Therefore, that doesn't prove that the sun is any more divine than that statue. But if the statue were to be destroyed and the sun would still continue to exist, that would lead those who worship the sun to say, oh, the very fact that is so necessary for the world that it couldn't be destroyed shows that it must be divine. And therefore, better. Okay. Therefore, Hashem has to leave all of them intact. Otherwise, they're going to think all the moves through on you. So we learn in a Braisa to expand on the Mishnah. Shalur philosophy nefeskein in Beroimi, the philosophers, the Chachmei Omer, Rashi says, the wise men among the nations, asked the Chachamim in Rome, Im alekeichen ein ritzonim ba'avadis Chachamim, if your God does not desire avadizara, lom mipnei ma'eni mevasla, why isn't he mevasla it? Why isn't he destroy it? Omru lahem, and the Chachamim answered them, like it says in the Mishnah, ilu l'dava she'en olam tzorech lo'i ho'yovin, if they were only worshipping things that the world doesn't need anyway, then fine, Hashem could very well destroy all of them. But but after all, they worship the sun, the moon, the stars, and the planets. Should Hashem destroy the world because of the fool? No, but the Braisa expands on it. Ella, so what happens? Why doesn't Hashem directly interfere? Olam kimin hoge noeg, the world continues to follow its normal pattern, the derech ha-teva, the shoytim shekilkalo, and these foolish people who ruin things, who worship things that they're not supposed to, asidin within a sedin. They're gonna end up having to pay the price. They're gonna end up being judged and having to pay the price for what they did.
They don't answer in a way that shows that they could have a schus.
Because that's not the point. Again, okay, so that basically what we're saying, I mean, it is the Chiruch Hafshis, but under a different way. Again, this is what we're saying before, especially about the vision about the sun and the moon versus the statues, right? So
they're not saying it this way.
They're not saying it in so many words, but that's the subject of it.
There are fools out there that are going to be judged.
Yeah.
Instead of saying,
in other words,
they could be rewarded.
Yeah, but again, if it was just a matter of reward, then we could argue like the Amshek Nefzak Gerla, we don't need the temptation, we don't need the reward. And why wouldn't Hashem
listen?
The goyim also, they could argue that we don't need the temptation,
they love rewards.
Yeah. Fine, but nevertheless, whatever, the point still is, it's not so much in order to reward that. I don't know, by the way, I mean, we say that Chassidi almost the Olam have a Chedek L'Olam above, but that's more than just not worshiping Avodah Zarah, that's keeping the other mitzvahs
in
Noyah
Chosin. But it's sufficient, we're saying it's at least a partial condition.
Fine, but okay, the Chachamim are focusing more on why it's not destroyed. So they're not so much in order to give reward, but if it's such a hateful thing, and the answer is again that the shoytim who are worshiping Avodah Zarah are going to end up having to render judgment are going to end up being called
to
judgment.
The goyim don't believe in that.
What do you mean the goyim don't believe in it? The goyim believe that there's going to that they, first of all, the Gemara tells us at the end of Menachos that the goyim believe in Elokod Elokai. They think of Hashem as the God of gods. In other words, there's the lesser gods, they think, who control things in the world. And above them is Hashem up there.
That they believe. But
so
they believe in Olam Hazeh, not in Olam Haba.
They believe in some kind of Olam Haba as well. Okay.
Tells them, you know what? There's going to be a judgment.
There is going to be a judgment. That's what they're saying. Hashem didn't listen to Hazeh. Eventually, they're going to be called to judgment.
But the Goyim don't believe in
it. Who says they don't? They believe in some kind of. Olam Haba necessarily the way we do, but yes, you have Goyim who believe in some kind of future, you ask the Christians, for example, you ask the Muslims, you ask the pagans. No, the pagans also, the pagans of those times also had some kind of belief in an afterlife. No, they did.
The Romans did.
They had some kind of belief. What does it have to do with the other? They believed in an afterlife. Okay, they would argue it's killing in honor. It's killing in honor of their empire. It's killing in honor of the emperor. Whatever the point is, Okay. Dover Acha, another explanation. The Chachamim continue here. You don't believe that. You're going to argue. Let's say that fine. That doesn't prove anything. Maybe after all, it means that there's some that Avodah Zarah has some reality to it. I'll give you a different example from something that you can accept. One second.
To go further, the Muslims who do believe in this, that there is a Hashem and there is a judgment. They continue killing and killing.
That's the point. In other words, that's fakir. They believe that they get into heaven by doing that kind of thing.
Right.
For the Romans, it would be the same thing. Okay, Dover Acha, continue the Chacham. Here is another way of looking at it. Here, you don't accept, you want to still argue that Avodah Zarah has a reality. I'll give you an example from some other area of life, something that you yourselves agree is also to do, and nevertheless, it doesn't prevent the natural world from occurring. Haresha Gozal Saw Shochitim, suppose somebody steals a saw of wheat, and he goes and plants it in the ground. By any logic, it ought not to grow. It's logical that it should not grow because Hashem runs the world. You don't believe in Hashem directly runs things in the world. Fine, but Lahavdra, whatever it is you believe in, believes that there's some kind of moral code in the world. You also agree that stealing is awesome. Well, then, by your logic, then in the stolen wheat ought not to grow. Ella, Olam Kamin Hagin Noyeg, but Hashem doesn't do it that way. The world continues to run according to its normal pattern, Vahola kind of goes. And again, the Shotim Shikilkala didn't list it in. Again, the foolish people who stole, yeah, the Chiruch Hapshis are going to end up having to pay the price. Yes, the Chiruch Hapshis, yeah. They do believe, that's the point. In other words, even the Goyim accept, at least as a principle, that stealing is author. They may not be so careful about it all the time, but in principle, they have in their laws and in their religions or whatever that stealing is author. That is, yeah. Dover Acher, and another explanation, another analogy we can give. Haresha Baal Ishes Chaveiro. Suppose a person has relations with somebody else's wife, which again, you Goyim also agree is something. So one explanation is that he wanted to give them examples, the Chum wants to give them examples from the big three, Ebed Zara, Gilad Arayis, and Shvich Hazama.
So that's not for the Goyim, that's for us.
Yeah, but nevertheless, those are the three big things that are big for us, and therefore he mentions it, and therefore he mentions it to them also. So Harei Shabbalei Shabbalei, if somebody has relations with somebody else's wife, Dinu Shalit Shabbalei, by rights she ought not to become pregnant from it, and yet she does. Again, what it is Hashem allows the world to run according to its natural pattern. The Shotim, for Shekilkalot, didn't listen to Fadin. And again, the Shotim who wound things, who damage things by doing what they're not supposed to do, they're going to end up having to be brought to judgment and paying the price. All expressing the same idea, in other words, the Chiruch Hapshis, basically.
Chiruch Hapshis, but not only these three things, you could come and say for all the loose upsets they're going to that apply.
Obviously, but we're giving these as examples. We're giving these as examples.
We should be complete and give them all the things they contradict.
No, but come on. No. The Gemara often has an expression, is he supposed to keep on listing them all like a peddler, listing everything that he has for sale. You mention a few representative things and you understand from them then, and you understand the rest, from them the rest.
Going with them. Is there any others?
Come on. The point has been made. The point has been made. Again, Yeah, once you have three of them, then the point has been made that it applies equally well everywhere else in the world. That just because something continues to go doesn't mean there still is. Yeah, there's the chiruch hapshis, there's the chiruch hapshis, and therefore so therefore beyond that point, Hashem doesn't interfere. He allows things to. I'm trying to find also the Maharal says something on this also specifically why it mentions these. I'm looking on Hebrew books. Maharal mentions that. So one thing he mentions is that for example, he says that we're saying over here Hashem can't destroy things that the world needs. So okay, that explains the sun and the moon and whatever. We just said Hashem is not going to destroy things. He's not going to destroy things like the sun and moon just because people worship them because the world needs them. Fine, but you could argue, what about, let's say, mountains and hills? The world doesn't necessarily need this particular mountain and hill. So therefore, the answer is, he gives by analogy, let's say a person steals wheat and plants it in the ground. Yeah, this particular mountain could be destroyed. So he gives them, so the Chachamim give an analogy, for example, from planting a seed in the ground. Where you have, you don't say that this particular patch of ground, therefore, is not going to grow. No, Hashem has a general way of running the world, where, in general, ground has the ability for seeds to germinate in it. So here also, Hashem keeps it under the same general rule. He doesn't make an exception. The point is, in other words, that if you have, even though you have this particular mountain maybe is not needed, fine, but this particular patch of ground that was used for planting stolen wheat isn't necessarily needed either, and yet Hashem allows the wheat to grow. So the same thing, don't think. It's unusual that this particular mountain is left intact even though people worship it.
Actually, they are useful mountains.
Any individual mountain, we're talking about any individual mountain. And then they continue also, what about, for example, when you have a case of a person is Mizana with an Eishes Eish, again, it's one individual person, but still, Hashem has a general thing, that humanity will have the ability to have children, and therefore he doesn't withdraw it in this one case. So in other words, the point is, in all these cases, yeah, it's a matter of the Chiruch Hapshis, that Hashem needs to keep the Chiruch Hapshis intact. Therefore, he's not going to start carving out exceptions, because then it'll be obvious that you shouldn't do this, and that'll affect the Chiruch Hapshis. So that's why, according to the Maharal, that's why the Chacham gave examples from these three kinds of things. One, of a Zara, which is something that affects the whole world. The second one being planting wheat, which is something that affects this particular patch of ground. And the third one being the Zana with an Eshet Ish, which affects respect this particular person or this particular husband, this particular man or woman.
And adding that those three mitzvahs are essential.
And the ATO just says, yeah, that's the whatever.
Well,
continue,
otherwise.
Yeah. Okay. Behind the Amr Shlokish, and this also fits with this last thing that we said, that you have a person in the Zana with an Eshetish, and nevertheless, a child is born according to the normal way. This fits with what Rish Lakish says. That Rish Lakish says, Amr HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Lodayim L'Rishoyim Sha'isim Sela Shalit Pumbi. It's not bad enough that the Rishoyim take my stamp with which I stamped out my coins, so to speak, and they make it Pumbi, they make it Hefker, meaning it was like this, you have a die that a king uses for his coinage. It's supposed to be used only for his coinage. Nobody else is ever allowed to use it. And yet meaning in other words, in the nimshal means the fact that a child is formed in the womb, and then it's formed using a certain pattern of their features and whatever. But people, the people do averus, and they end up in a mizana with an error, with an eshetish or whatever. And so to speak, they take Hashem's coinage die and use it to forge coins of their own, like children who counterfeit, right? And not only that, so to speak, they caused me to go to the trouble of having to stamp it against my will. Because after all, so to speak, Hashem is forced to create this child in the womb, even though it's against his will. But why is that? Because Olam Kiminhagin, right? So therefore, that fits with what the Chachamim explained, that you have an example of a person in the Zana with an Eishes Ish, and yet Hashem doesn't directly interfere and allows the Eishes to take his course. Okay, more on this topic about Avodah Zarah. Shah philosophus echaz Ram Gamliel, a certain philosopher asked Ram Gamliel, it says in your Torah, Hashem, your God, is a consuming fire. He's a jealous God. So the question, jealous means, the word kina has two meanings. It can mean to be jealous, which later on the Gemara is going to take up somebody who asks, maybe it means that. The other meaning, it means like zealous, like angry, to punish, you're vengeful, yeah. So why is Hashem only vengeful against those who worship Avodah Zarah rather than against the Avodah Zarah itself? In other words, let him destroy the Avodah Zarah. Like the organ is in our mission. Amaloi, so Rabbi Gamliel tells him, Emshol ha'chol ha'mashol ha'ma devagayma. Let me give you an analogy. It's like this. L'melech basav adam shayu le'ben echad. You have a human king who had an only son. V'oysa ben ha'yim agadaloi ha'kelev. The son had a pet dog. The son named the dog after his father, which is a very disgraceful thing to do. And if the son has to swear, over b'chaye kelev abba, he says, by the life of the dog, my father. Abba meaning instead of his father's name, his father is King George, let's say. So by the life of the dog, George. Because Shama Amelach, when the king hears about this, Ami Ukoyas, who is he going to be angry at? Ala Ben Ukoyas or Ala Kelev Ukoyas? Is he going to be angry at the son that he disgraced him like that? Or is he going to be angry at the dog? Heavy on Ala Ben Ukoyas. Obviously, he's angry at the son because he has that. He's the one who chose to do this. The dog is an innocent bystander. So the same thing. Hashem is angry at those who worship Avodah Zarah. He doesn't take it out on the Avodah Zarah itself. Amaloi, but the goy acts. You're calling Avodah Zarah a dog as if it has no independent power. Don't we see that Avodah Zarah has something to it? What did you ever see that makes you think that Avodah Zarah has some kind of power? Amaloi, so the guy says, Tamachas nofla bleika b'irenu. One time a fire broke out in our city. V'nisra fakala irkola, the entire city burnt down. V'osei beis avodas kechavim v'nisra. But that temple of that Avodah Zarah was not burned. So don't you see that it has some power? Amaloi, so Gamliel tells him, Em shalachal mashal amal devademo. Let me give you another mashal to explain it. What is it like? The melech bas of adam shesarcha ala medina. Imagine you have a melech bas of adam that a particular province rebelled against it. Later on, when the king comes to put down the rebellion and to fight against them, who does he fight against? Does he fight against the living or does he fight against the dead? He fights against the living. So the same thing, in other words, so if Hashem wants to get back at you guys for worshipping Avodah Zarah, he's not going to burn down your temple of Avodah Zarah, which after all, in and of itself, is a dead thing. So therefore, instead, he punishes the ones who were worshiping it. I'm looking at Marsha. That'll be for next week. On the lake, Kalabasa Kodos and Metsaka Kodos. So the philosopher says, well, if you're calling it a dog, you're calling it dead, meaning, in other words, it has no utility in the world. So now we're back to the argument in the Mishnah, in Keni Abdenim Naolam. Then fine, I accept the opinion of Yur Chachamim, that, let's say, that Avodah Zarah is worthless. But in that case, why doesn't Hashem destroy it altogether? According to my Svara that I hold, it has validity. Okay, well, that's why it's not destroyed. But if you, Rabbi Gamliel, are arguing, fine, I'm willing to accept, for purposes of argument, that you're saying it's like a dog and it's like dead, it's useless for the world, so let Hashem destroy it. And again, Amaloi, so Rabbi Gamliel tells him, again, like in the Mishnah, Ilu if they only worship things that the world doesn't need, then yes, Hashem could destroy it. But they worship the sun, the moon, the stars, the planets. They also worship the streams and the valleys. Should Hashem have to destroy his world because of fools? And in fact, thus we see a pasuk that expresses that idea. In the beginning of the Navi Tzfanya, and the Navi Tzfanya is talking about how Hashem is going to punish the goyim who worship Avodah Zarah. But it starts out by saying, now on the face of it, the psukim that we're going to quote over here, on the face of it are said b'nichusa, that this is what's going to happen. The Gemara is understanding, though, that these psukim are b'loshin tema. They're a rhetorical question. Should I have to utterly destroy everything from the surface of the ground, says Hashem? Should I have to destroy everything because they worship it? Should I have to destroy the people and the animals? Should I have to destroy the birds of the heavens and the fish of the sea? And the things that make the Rishoyim stumble? Meaning, in other words, the point of the psukim is, are you going to say that just because the goyim stumble on these, the rishoyim stumble on these things and worship them, therefore Hashem should have to destroy them? After all, though, we see that people also worship other human beings sometimes. So what are you going to do? Should I have to destroy humanity from the face of the earth? No. So therefore, once one object of Avodah Zarah is not going to be destroyed, then none of them are going to be destroyed, like we said in the Mishnah, because otherwise it'll make the ones who worship the ones that are still left alone, it'll make them think all the more strongly those things must be divine beings, otherwise they would have been destroyed too.
That goes, in a way, it goes against what Chassidus said, that the Olam Helem, Hashem wants to withdraw from this world.
The world is a Helem. The world is, Elikos is concealed in the world. That's the point we're saying. That's exactly the point we're saying over here. That, in other words, that the Hashem is, so to speak, forced by the way that he set up the world himself.
He wants to be this way.
Hashem wants it because he wants Dideva Takhtarinim. Ain Tachs and Lamata Hemenu. All world, there's no lower world because this is the lowest world as far as that Elikos is not visible. And therefore, that makes it possible for people to think that the world exists as some kind of independent entity and the various creatures in it are divine beings and whatever. That's exactly what we're saying. So therefore, Hashem has to, so to speak, leave it alone and expect that we and eventually the whole world are going to realize that that's false and realize that Ainoid Milavadai and stop worshipping Avodah Zarah. No, well, we're still going to have more discussion about this tomorrow. Well, okay. But we still have 20 more blocks to go. Yeah. Okay. That's good.